Welcome again to Cottage Talk Extra Time. I am Russ Goldman, and co-hosting with me today will be Giannis Janaeus and David Holly. In this episode, we will be discussing a 2-0 Fulham victory on the road against Huddersfield Town yesterday. And I don't even know if I've even recovered since then, but we have so much to get through. I look forward to talking about this. And I'm going to bring on one of my co-hosts who's on the line with me right now. David, how are you doing, and have you recovered?
No, not really, Russ. We had the Polish Mafia around last night, and I had two Jack Daniels and Coke, and that was it. I was zonked out until about midday. I only just got up in time for Sunday roast, had a shower, and now I'm here with you guys. So yeah, it was fantastic. I mean, I sat in the bar for about 3 hours with my Jack Daniels last night. I was reading all the Twitters, and there was all this debate going on, inane debate between Emilio and a few of us, Mike, I think, and about having a curry for dinner and stuff. It was all, the mood was so light, so lightened by this wonderful result, And, they talk about swings and roundabouts and things even themselves out. Well, I certainly think the Leeds result was evened out yesterday, and it's good that we got such a kind of instant payback.
Absolutely, David. You know, again, it's funny because I heard Kit after the match, and he went right to that Leeds match and, saying, we played so much better against Leeds. Paraphrasing a little bit, and got nothing out of it. Now you you're talking about this match, and listen, we'll go through the entire thing, and definitely it is almost role reversal this time around. So I guess you could say everything balances itself out, David, because maybe we should have gotten something out of the Leeds match. Even won the match, and this time around, it's amazing that they got all 3 points. So. For me, it balances itself all out, David.
No, certainly. And it's fantastic also for the travelling fans. And I'm a bit gutted because I actually wanted to go to this one because it's not a million.
They were fantastic, by the way. I'm glad that you brought them up. I heard them throughout the match, and I watched the match and watched the replay just before we started doing the show. David, I just want to mention this because you could see it on the replay at the very end. But in the... I'm sorry, in the 2 minute of highlights, but if you watch the replay, you will see the celebration with not just Seiko Fofana and Ryan Tunnicliffe, but other players as well. The Fulham supporters just covering them. It was really amazing. They were very loud.
Yeah, no, it was a shame because there were engineering works on two different routes, and there was no way I could get a train over there, and it's a bit of a pig to drive from where I am because I was hoping to go to this one. That's why I went last week to Sheffield instead because it was a bit easier. But it's a shame. I'd love to have been there to see it, but, it's brilliant that we can be here today talking about a fantastic result, if not performance, fantastic result for us, rather than some of the recent doom and gloom, of course, we've had to put up with.
Absolutely, David. Listen, at this time of the year, with everything going on with Fulham Football Club, it's about the result, and you nailed it. And it's funny because while this is all going on, I am just checking my Twitter feed about the Bolton match, Bolton playing Wigan. And Bolton score a goal, and I'm like, oh, this is going to be fantastic if Fulham could hold on. Unfortunately, Wigan did get a late equalizer. But still, Fulham are 8 points above Wigan right now. And, it's funny because another result went their way in the Rotherham match. Again, I thought Rotherham were going to pull that match up. They ended up losing in the end. So things really went Fulham's way yesterday, David.
That was fantastic to watch that as well. There was about, literally, was three goals in the last minute or in injury time on that one.
I saw the highlights of it. It's crazy.
It was, and it was what's-his-face scored for Wednesday, the one I called, whatever I called him last week. Zlatan Ibrahimovic, that one. Yeah, he scored, didn't he? And then it was an equaliser, wasn't it? And Rotherham, I think, and then they scored again or something like that. It was just madness, absolute madness, which is... it's fantastic, but obviously the fact that we won and the fact that Millwall only got held to a draw after leading 2-0,
right.
And of course Wigan just drew, we gained 2 points on the teams in the bottom three, so we are, we have our kind of eight-point cushion back. Well, forgetting the goal difference, we have our eight-point cushion back again for now, which is great, and we have Rotherham below us.
Yeah, listen, it's all... You know, it's all good. You know, again, a result can change so many things. Obviously, there's still work to be done, David. But yesterday was huge for Fulham Football Club. There's no question about that. And I just want to start with this because I definitely want to just get your opening thoughts about everything that you listened to. And obviously, you saw the highlights. I watched the highlights and also watched the replay. But the whole thing was really listening to it. If I would have said before the match began that Brian Ruiz, Scott Parker, and Ross McCormack, along with Costas Stafoulidis, who was out suspended, would not be playing, and Fulham would get all 3 points, would you be surprised? And honestly, I had a very bad feeling about this because of those 4 players not being involved, David. So I'm curious what was going through your mind just when you saw the starting 11. I guess we're jumping to the starting 11.
Well, obviously, I wasn't particularly excited by the starting 11 because it seemed to be full of fullbacks. But out of the 4 you mentioned, I think for me, obviously the big misses were Scott Parker and Ross McCormack. Ruiz, he's hot and cold. He doesn't seem to play away from home very well. He's got a bad back or whatever he's got. And Stafoulidis, again, he's been a bit hot and cold. You know, he's done some good stuff and everything. But, Parker's been pretty consistent there. He has been probably the player of the season overall for me so far. And McCormack, of course, although he has his moments, it's obvious what he can do, his work rate and his talent. So those two certainly were the important ones. And it was funny because I was reading Twitter yesterday morning and Thomas McElroy was on the Motspur Park coach and he said there's 28 of us going to Huddersfield. And then he tweeted there's 27 of us going. And I replied to him, has Brian Ruiz changed his mind then about the coach journey again?
Oh, David.
But I replied, well, someone's probably had a lucky escape anyway, but I bet that poor soul who changed his mind and couldn't travel because they felt unwell or whatever must have really, been sad that they missed such a momentous victory from against all odds, really. But certainly for me, it was Parker and McCormack who were the two big misses.
Yeah, listen, I definitely hear you on that. And, again, we're talking about when I saw the starting 11, David, I just did not have a good feeling about this. I thought, okay, if they could just get a draw, we'll be okay. A draw, is a result, definitely helps. But I could not imagine what we were going to be listening to for the next 2 hours. And then I'm going to go back to you. I just want to get your thoughts about what you listened to, David. Again, you talked about needing to have a few drinks, I have to tell you, I'm a huge Patriots fan. I watched the Super Bowl, and that was about as nervy as you can be. For me, this match that I listened to topped it. This match, I was full of nerves pretty much the entire time. So I'm curious just your opening thoughts of what you listened to.
Well, I'm not actually a drinker as such. I very rarely drink, and the drink wasn't for nerves. It was just because we had the Polish mafia around, and they just love to force alcohol down your throat at the slightest any opportunity, but it seemed a good occasion to have a drink with them to celebrate. But I don't know if I was nervy, really. I was. It was almost just disbelief that I think I said to you yesterday that I predicted 1-1.
Yes.
And at 1-0, the referee or whoever seemed to be conspiring to make it 1-1. It just wasn't happening. The ball wasn't going in. It was And the longer it went on, I thought, yes, maybe we can snatch this. It was like the Leeds in reverse. There's these games when you think, and I saw it all over Twitter, and people were saying, oh yeah, it's fine, it's 1-0, but they're going to score a late goal, or they're going to score 2 late goals, and we're going to lose it. But I don't know. I just thought they're never going to score. The longer it went on, they're just never going to score. And then when Fofana went up the other end in the last minute, literally, and put it away, I was banging on the walls and everything and shouting at the kids and saying, you won't believe it, what a robbery, I was really jubilant by that, You always get a strange view listening to Gentleman Gin anyways, because he's, not only does he have some strange pronunciations occasionally, but he's obviously very one-sided, and it's good that we have someone on our side, but I sometimes find it hard to take it all too seriously because every time there's a foul and free kick, it's, oh, no, that wasn't a foul. You get up, there was nothing there. But even he said there were a couple of penalty shouts that he thought were good shouts that weren't given.
Yes, I actually watched those, David, and one was more than the other. You know, the one late, you know, again, the one that I think that hit, I want to say Grimmer's arm. I didn't think so. Jim actually thought that it was. But again, you're only getting one view. I looked at it a couple times. I'm like, I don't see it, but I could see why some might see it as a penalty. There was one, I believe, also in the first half, you know, that you can make the argument for. There, you know, again, there are all these interesting situations conspiring against Fulham. Honestly, you know, everything seemed to be going against them, but they couldn't score for whatever reason. Huddersfield could not score. Part of that has to do with Fulham. You know, again, it's a performance, you know, that you would say they were definitely not the better side. But, and I'll say with a B-U-T, but character. They show character with 10 men, David, holding on. And, you know, watching the replay, you really saw that at the very end of the match. And a player that actually stood out, David, he did score the goal, was Seiko Fofana. You know, again, I watched this at the very end. He had so much energy, and he almost helped them score another goal before he actually scored himself. But it wasn't meant to be. He set up, I believe it was, I want to say Collie Woodrow, but it didn't end up being a goal. But he was very lively and very important at the end of that game. So again, a little shout out for Seiko Fofana, because I thought he played well, especially in the short period of time that he was on. All right, David, let's get into this. We already talked about the thoughts on the starting 11. You shared your thoughts again. I thought, you know, I thought based on the starting 11, they'd be lucky to get a point. That was really my thought going into it. But let's start right off from the second minute, David. Fulham get a corner kick, and shockingly enough, they scored off the corner kick from Alex Kaczynik. Let's talk about this, and how surprised were you, especially when you watched the replay of it?
Well, I mean, we didn't go a lot into the starting 11. I must admit, when I saw the starting 11, I thought he was going to play a 4-4-2. I thought he was going to play with Hoogland, or whatever he's called, Hoogland, whatever he's been calling him, Jim.
Right.
Maybe Hoogland or Richards at right midfield with Grimmer or something at right back, and maybe Kavanagh left back, and Alex left midfield. So I thought we might see a 4-4-2, to be honest with you, to try and just get back to basics. But in fact, we did come out with the old diamond again, which was a bit of a surprise. You know, to see, obviously, we have Richards chosen at left back ahead of maybe Kavanagh or even Amber Bietu, who's technically available, of course. But it was a little bit of a, he seems to be a bit of a favourite there, Richards, doesn't he? And he seems to get in the team, however. But you know, it was good to see Alex get a chance again. Obviously, I assumed he was going to, you know, we're going to play a 4-4-2, play with width, try and get crosses in for Matt Smith and Corley, because we've got two big guys up front there. So it was a surprise that they did this, but obviously it was great, you know, and as I've always been saying about these corners and stuff, concede early corners and goals and stuff, and it worked in our favour. And it was a bit ironic because Alex has, I think his delivery from corners has been quite poor. He's had a bit of the Brian Ruiz syndrome, fails to beat the first man at the near post too often. And this corner, it was a little bit like that in a way. It didn't really have quite enough flight, you know. It fell a bit short, but somehow it evaded everybody at the near post and straight in. I think there was a deflection of someone. And I'd only just switched on this minute. I'd missed the first minute, actually, for Gentleman Jim. So all I knew was we were having this corner. So it was the very first thing I heard. So it was a lucky omen for me that I've switched it on. It's just come on and we've scored. And, you know, I couldn't believe it, really. It was incredible. And so when you see it, you think, how on earth did that get in? Because it wasn't one of these that sometimes they have a bit of height and a bit of whip on them and they sort of bend out and bend back in and sort of catch the keeper out, go over his head into the top corner in the far side. This one just got limped in at the near post, really, didn't it? So it was kind of one of these strange ones that just catches everybody out. But, you know, when you're in our situation, you take whatever you can get, mate, you know?
Absolutely, David. And just a little heads up, Giannis is having a hard time joining us, and he's trying to join us. So just to let you know, sometimes he has a hard time with Skype, and hopefully he will be joining us, David. But, you know, that opportunity to score, you know, I didn't see it coming. What's interesting for me is listening to the match and having Twitter open at the same time. And Twitter was about 15 to 20 seconds ahead of the stream I was listening to on my iPad. So I knew that he scored before Gentleman Jim said it. So it was interesting because it was like that the entire match. So I would always get this little heads up when something was about to happen. And it was actually fun that way to have Jim actually a little bit on delay. I would say about 15 to 20 seconds. But yes, especially when I watched it back, David, what a shocker that it got in there. I mean, it barely got in there, but it got in there. And that gives us the early lead, you know, and then you're thinking, okay, well, we have, about 88 more minutes to go, David, you know, plus stoppage time for both halves. That's a long time. You know, so much can happen in that period of time. And let's be honest here, even in the first half watching the replay, they control the play. The stats are going to back this up regardless for the entire match. But they control – they really – excuse me – control the play. But the next real interesting moment didn't happen until late in the first half, in the 40th minute. You know, again, Marcus Benelli was a little busy, but in the 40th minute, Naki Wells had a header from a nice cross by Ishmael Miller, who was a very, very dangerous player in this match for Huddersfield Town. But Marcus Bettinelli knocked it onto the post. Talk about this. This is, again, another nice moment for Marcus Bettinelli, David.
Well, we said on Friday that I thought Ishmael Miller was going to be a big threat. You know, he was
a handful.
For Blackpool against us and scored, of course. And, you know, with the way we've been this year with crosses coming in and, you know, headers and whatever, that, you know, we have been a bit vulnerable. So it was great that Bettinelli has been able to, you know, save us there, and it wasn't the only time, obviously. So that full credit to see him having, I suppose, for me, and I've only seen the highlights, and from what I've read, I haven't seen the whole game, whether he's made a few clangers along the way, but the impression I get is that he actually had a good game overall. And as I mentioned to you off air beforehand, I spoke to Robert Wilson, who was at the game, and he's given me some ratings. And he speaks highly of Bettinelli. So it's good that, you know, he seems to be back on track after maybe a couple of below-par performances. And I don't know if he's been watching the news, because the England goalkeepers have been falling by the wayside. And, you know, he's got every chance of getting, you know, higher up, because, you know, we've lost, I think, both Ben Foster and Fraser Foster for the rest of the season now.
Wow.
I can't remember who was called in now. It was Rob Green and someone else have been called into the England squad, the main squad.
Was it Butland?
Yes, that's right, yes, Butland. I couldn't think of that. But yeah, Butland and Rob Green have been called into the senior squad. Obviously, they have been there before. But, you know, probably with both these goalkeepers potentially out for the rest of the season with, you know, injuries, you know, we're looking at maybe he's not so far down the pecking order now. If he keeps playing well and does a good job on under-21's duty, it's really, it could be great news for him.
Absolutely, David. And listen, you know, I really scrambled to watch this replay, but I really did watch it, and Marcus Bettinelli was back in form. That's all I'm going to say. And I look forward to you reading Robert Wilson's ratings at the end of the show. You're not going to rate them, but Robert Wilson is going to be doing his ratings, which will be good, you know, to get his perspective on this. And Robert, if you're listening, thank you so much for sending those to David so we can share them during the show. I really appreciate it and look forward to hearing what you had to say about this match and the players. But we have a little bit to get to from that, David. All right, so that was in the 40th minute, that opportunity by Naki Wells. And Fulham get to the half, winning 1-0, David. And going into the second half, what were your thoughts? I just want to get your thought process at the half. Did you think that Fulham could hold on and get the victory, or were you waiting for that other shoe to drop?
Yeah, I think it was the latter, to be honest with you. I'm so used to Fulham coming out differently second half, or the other team coming out differently second half. We just, you know, how many times have we held on to leads, really? Not that many. Or how many times have we conceded goals? I mean, yes, it's, you know, I think, what did we say on the previous show when you said, what does Fulham have to do to win this match? We said, score first. Whoever scores first will win. And so, you know, it worked. It actually did work, but we actually did hold out. But, you know, I'm so used to the way things have been lately. I'm kind of blasé to it, and it is. It's just a matter of waiting for the other team to score, really. It really is. It's, you know, they had so many chances in the second half with hitting posts or whatever, or saves, or penalty misses and things. It just, as I say, it was just only as you got towards the end, you thought, it's just not their day, you know. It was just Leeds all over again. It's just, we're never going to score. Whatever happens, we're never going to score. And it just seemed like that. And I thought, yes, we can win this. We really can. But certainly at the start of the second half, no, I expected maybe Huddersfield to come out resurgent, because, you know, you've got to be buoyed by the fact, you know, like we should have been on against Leeds, that you've been the better team and, you know, you've created the better chances and you should be ahead. And obviously, you know, for us, we started very badly second half against Leeds and then lost Stathlidis. But, you know, that didn't happen for Huddersfield, that they didn't start badly. In fact, you know, obviously things went very well for them with you know, the sending off and everything else. So, you know, it was a fantastic rear guard action by us to hang on. As I say, the longer it went, the more confident I actually became.
Yeah, you know, very good point there, David. The longer the match went on, the more I actually felt a little confident, you know, because they were showing resiliency, they were showing character, as Kit Simons mentioned after the match, and you know, and they were getting more and more desperate, and they had many opportunities. We're going to talk about that coming up, you know, the opportunities that Huddersfield Town had. But Fulham held on, and that's the bottom line. But let's go now to the second half, and let's go to the huge controversy that you could see on the highlight package. I actually watched a little bit more of it on the replay, you know, play from it before. Again, I believe this actually started with a corner kick, David. So let's just start there. And then in the 57th minute, a shot by Ishmael Miller, we're talking about that guy again, is blocked off the line by Sean Hutchinson. And the ref pointed to the spot for a penalty for a handball in the box. Also, he initially sent off the wrong player, as Colin Woodrow was given the red card, but then it was rescinded and given to Sean Hutchinson. Talk about this whole scenario, David, before the penalty was taken. We'll talk about the penalty separate. I just want to talk about this. And do you think that this was a handball?
I've only seen it, obviously, from the highlight. It looks like it's hit him somewhere around the shoulder, to be honest with you. Chest.
That's what I thought.
Shoulder. It's certainly not a hand to ball. Obviously, handball is anywhere up to the top of your arm. But to be honest with you, it didn't look like it hit anywhere that was handball. It looked like it was a genuine attempt to chest the ball off the line, something like that. So on that basis alone, it was a very harsh decision. I can understand, obviously, why a red card is given, because if the ref does think it's a deliberate handball, it has to be a red card. There's no two ways about it. But no, it looks incredibly harsh. And I don't know if this is one of these things that you can ask to be rescinded. I know in some cases you can. Obviously, had Corley gone and stayed gone, they would have been able to rescind it on mistaken identity. But then Hutchinson would have ended up being retrospectively banned, which in some ways would have been better, because you get an extra match ban every time you get sent off. So Hutchinson will get a two-game ban now rather than a one-game ban, because he's already been sent off this season. Unless, of course, as I say, we can get it rescinded on the basis that it was a wrong decision. But I don't know how much appeal there can be. I mean, sometimes there is a course of appeal. But for me, anyway, it was a very harsh decision. It didn't look like a deliberate handball to me, or an accidental handball even. It looked like it was a genuine attempt to play the ball legally. And then, of course, God knows what's happened. You know, even Gentleman Jim, he was confused. He had Michael Turner sent off as well as them.
He did.
Anyone with sort of mildly blonde hair was in the firing line, I think. So could have been Jack Grimmer as well, I suppose. And anyone else? Alex Kakinich as well? No, maybe not. Maybe he's a bit more brunette.
Oh,
but,
boy.
Yeah. You know, it was... you say Gentleman Jim was confused by it, and I mean it's pretty awful. I mean, I was going to say in the Premier League these things don't happen because the refs are kind of seem to be on very knowledgeable terms with all the players, but obviously it does happen in the Premier League, as we've seen. I mean, yesterday they couldn't manage to distinguish between Gareth McCauley and Dawson at West Brom, and it's happened between other players as well in the past.
I couldn't believe that one either, David.
Yeah, I mean it was ridiculous, because the ref must have known that you know, who was who. He must have a basic understanding of who was who. I mean, he clearly, you know, he clearly has no idea who our players are, I think, if he can't, you know. He's done that. You know, someone who's been playing up front. I know we're back defending a corner since, you know, as a call, he might have been back there anyway. But, you know, someone who's been playing up front the whole game and someone who's been playing in defence, and he's just, I don't know, he's failed to, like, do that. And
yeah.
All I can say is, and I think Gentleman Jim did credit him for this, he did actually, well, in inverted commas, make the right decision in the end.
He did, and I guess you have to give him credit for that. At least he got it right in the end, even though you and I both don't think that was a handball, and Sean Hutchinson should have been sent off. But he finally got the right player right, at least that part, you know. And you know, Colley Woodrow was beside himself, and really was going nuts. And I guess I understand that because it wasn't him. You know, it wasn't him. He had to be restrained at one point on the pitch. When I saw the replay, you know, literally had to another player had to hold him back because he was really angry. He was really upset. And you know what? I can't blame the kid. You know, it wasn't him. You know, he got it wrong. Looked like Giannis just tried dialing in and then unfortunately fell back out. Giannis, if you can hear me, try dialing back in again. He's having all kinds of Skype problems. And hopefully he will be joining us soon, David. But he is trying, just so you know, in case you're wondering what's going on with Giannis Chinaeus. He is trying to join us. All right, David, now let's talk about the penalty. And again, Marcus Bettinelli does it again, my friend. You know, it's funny. Like I said, the delay was about 15 to 20 seconds. I saw all these people saying, unbelievable, you know, Marcus Bettinelli does it again on Twitter. And then, of course, you know, gentlemen, Jim was beside himself. Talking about people beside himself, David. You know, with this save by Marcus Bettinelli on Naki Wells. Talk about the save on the penalty.
Well, I must admit, when I heard the way Gentleman Jim described it, you know, live, I was expecting to see Gordon Banks against Pelé revisited, if you remember that famous one from the 1970
yep.
World Cup. And to be honest with you, it wasn't quite in that league. It wasn't a brilliant penalty, I have to say. It was fairly central, but, you know, he saved it. That's the thing, because, you know, you put him in the middle and the keeper goes the wrong way, it looks like a good penalty. But it wasn't a good penalty. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't in the corner. It was a nice height to be saved. But credit to Marcus, again, he's obviously got a knack for these things. You know, and that is almost, you know, one of probably what you'd call your turning point of the match, isn't it? Do we do turning points anymore? I can't remember if we do. We haven't done them for a while.
No, we don't.
That was the turning point to go back to the old sort of way of doing it. Because I think if they scored there with all the turmoil went on, our heads would probably have gone, and Huddersfield could have run out winners. I think so. You know, that is a pivotal moment for me.
Absolutely, David. There's no question about it. And again, huge credit goes to Marcus Bettinelli. And you know, keeping Fulham in the lead, you know, and like you said, turning point. Everything would have changed, I think, if he doesn't save that. You know, then we really would be holding on just to get something out of the match. All right, let's try Giannis again. Oh, he dropped off again. We're having all kinds of problems with Giannis. Hopefully, he will be coming back on. Sometimes this happens, David, as you know, with Skype. So hopefully Giannis will eventually be getting in. I'm sure everyone wants to hear what Giannis has to say about this match. All right, David. All right, let's talk about what happened a little bit later. Only 3 minutes later, Fulham actually had a very good chance to score. Colley Woodrow hits the post with a shot, which would have given Fulham the 2-0 lead. Talk about this, because this was a decent opportunity by Colley.
Yeah, I think I would class this as more sort of unlucky than poor finishing, really. I think he's done everything right. You know, he's gone around the keeper, basically, pulled it back from the angle. It just, you know, the post just got in the way, unfortunately. And that would have been fantastic at that stage after what happened before. But, you know, that was literally our only chance in the second half until we scored, I think, if I can remember rightly from, you know, the way it was going. It sounded very much one-way traffic. But, no, I mean, it was good. I think Corley had a good game overall from, you know, what was said and everything. It certainly seemed to hear more about him than Matt Smith. Matt Smith seemed to be quite subdued, and I don't know if that was because we were playing a narrow system again that we weren't getting the right service to him. But no, I mean, as I say, for Corley, for me, that's he was unlucky more than poor finishing.
I totally agree with you on that. And I thought this was a decent opportunity by Corley, a little bit unlucky, like you mentioned. I totally agree with you on that. Getting back to Matt Smith, David, very, very good point on him. The only thing I will say is I like having him in there for defending corners. You know, again, it seemed like he was winning almost every header. Would you agree with that? You know, again, listening to it, you didn't see it, but it sounded like he was winning the majority of the headers.
No, I mean, I think he's been a very, welcome surprise, really, for me, that I expected him to be more just a kind of a very one-dimensional player who was going to just lump it up to him. But I think there's a bit more to him than that. Obviously, the fact that he can come back and defend corners and help defend corners is brilliant. But I think he's got enough about him on the ground that, you know, given the right service and everything, he'll the sort of player you can put through as well, and he'll score. He'll score as many goals, you know, off the deck as he will in the air. So I think it's, you know, it's almost madness that he wasn't recalled sooner, or that he was sent out, really, the way things have panned out.
Yeah, listen, David, he's made a difference, and I'm glad that you mentioned what he's done, you know, going forward and also going back, you know, again, helping with the defense. He's more than, I guess, what we would say here, a one-trick pony, meaning that he's just someone that could head the ball in the back of the net. I think he can actually shoot, too, and as we're finding out, he can also defend. So he can really, really be a big help there. So Matt Smith, you know, again, has been an asset since he's returned. There's no other way to put it. And he might not have been as instrumental in creating opportunities or being part of opportunities in this match, David, but I definitely, you know, watching back the match like I did, felt his presence defensively, and I think it was needed, especially against this team in the second half, which were really going gung-ho at Fulham. So I do have to give Matt Smith some credit in this match, even though it doesn't really show up, and what you would say the box score doesn't show up, because, again, he didn't have any really opportunities to score, but he did other things that were helpful in this victory. All right, David, now let's move on to the 72nd minute. We're going to talk about the penalty taken separately, but let's talk about Sean Scannell going. He goes down in the box, followed by Ashley Richards. I'm going to ask you again, should this have been a penalty?
Again, I don't think it was for me. I don't think there was enough to it. I think he's made a meal of it, really, been minimal or no contact. I mean, I was moaning about Ashley Richards being a bit feeble in the tackle the other day, and I don't think he did anything particularly that wrong there. He just kind of maybe a slight coming together, but minimal contact, if anything. So I think the ref got that one wrong. Okay, maybe he made up for it with the ones he didn't give. So and justice was done anyway in the end. But yeah, no, I don't think that was a penalty.
I didn't think so either, to be honest with you. I think the ref had a very tough match, David. It's funny because you didn't have that much information on him going into it. Remember when we did the preview? So there was no way of knowing what to expect from this ref, but I think that he had a rough match. But let's try Giannis again. Hopefully we got Giannis. Giannis, are you with us?
Hello!
Yep, he's here.
I am so glad that we finally got you on, Giannis. It took 35 minutes, but thank you so much for joining us.
Welcome. It's called Rogers Communications Incompetence. I mean, honestly, quicker to train a chimp.
All right, Giannis, we're going through this match. You know, we're going through all the key moments. But I just really want to go back with you and just get your overall thoughts on the victory yesterday. Let's start there, and then we'll go through the key moments with you.
Well, it's complete reversal Wednesday night, isn't it? I mean, we dominated Wednesday night. I mean, couldn't score. I was going to say couldn't score in a brothel, but you know what I mean by that.
Yeah.
26 shots, and then yesterday it all happens, isn't it, really? Three shots on target, you know, a red, and yet another red card, two penalties, a ref who couldn't tell Mario Balotelli from George Best, and what do you get? A 2-0 away win. It baffles the mind, really. But the main thing is we got the points. Millwall slipped up. Rotherham, a late lead slip up against Sheffield Wednesday. Wigan couldn't get a win. So it really sets us up nicely for the game against the Brentford next week. And I'm hoping we're in a good mood there, and it's a big, big game for them. So hopefully we can knock a few past them, get the 3 points, and send them back on the M4.
Absolutely, Giannis. Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. That match now becomes huge for both teams because, again, it could really just put this situation with relegation almost completely off the table if Fulham get the victory. And honestly, you know, it's a London derby. It's two clubs very close. This is something Fulham need to win this match. But again, we'll talk about that in the coming weeks leading up to the Brentford match. But again, we're going through this match, and I want to get your thoughts on the two penalties that were given against Fulham. You know, again, David and I were just going through the first one. We're just about to go through the second one. I'm just going to ask you flat out, do you think either one of them should have been a penalty?
I think both of them were. I mean, the speed at which the first ball came across with Hutchinson, I'm not really sure what he could have done. He was right in position, the ref. The second one, though, again, Richards. I mean, go back on the M4, will you? Like, what a stupid challenge. I mean, you cat has nine lives and you've managed to get away with one. That brilliant save from Marcus. And then you give another one away, and it was really a needless challenge. And here we go, and yet another penalty. This has got to be the most indisciplined Fulham team I can remember in so many years. One red card, five yellows. I mean, you remember a few years back, we got into the Europa League because of through the fair play table.
Absolutely.
And I think our first round, we went up to Tórshavn in the Faroes. I mean, it seems like every week we're in the referee's notebook. And I don't think it helps us. It doesn't help us. We start to get a reputation of a team that's easy to get cards. And I think that God was shining on us yesterday. We got our element of humongous luck. We had really no right to have got anything out of that game. But we did. And I suppose maybe it's justice for what happened on Wednesday night. But I do think it was two penalties. I think the penalties were justified. I just find it laughable that you've got someone like Cawley Woodrow crying his eyes out on a field saying, it's not me, I'm not going off the field, I didn't do it. And the referee, for some reason, not knowing the difference between the two, when you look at the height, and even look at the surely the linesman would have spotted it as well, but
yeah,
Lord knows.
Yeah, good stuff there, Giannis. And we're going to get near the end of this match. And David, I'm going to go back to you. Because now we're going to talk about the penalty, and as Giannis was saying, you know, luck might have been on our side. So talk about this, because again, it's about a 15 second delay for me, and when I saw it hit the post, I could not believe it. So when you watch this, did you just feel at this point when it hits the post that Fulham might actually win this match?
As I said before, yeah, the longer it went on, really, I thought they're not going to score. This is always an issue when you get a couple of penalties in a match and the first one has been missed or saved. Do you change penalty takers, or does the same guy go out and try and take it again? And of course he has, and it's obviously it's in his mind that he's missed it the first one. It's going to be like that, and I'm sure Marcus was giving him the eye and maybe a bit of mind games, I don't know. But then, so what do? You put it the same way? Do you put it the other way? What do I do? You know, and it's, you know, I played in goal and I've tried to do those guessing games as well before. And obviously, at the end of the day, he's trying to put it the other way. And I guess, and I don't know, I'm guessing. Guessing is a very dangerous thing to do, I know. But I'm guessing perhaps that he has a favoured side and a less favoured side. Some people can put it either way. Some people always tend to put it the same way. Perhaps he wasn't as comfortable putting it that way. I don't know. He's changed his mind, deciding to do it. And he screwed it up and he's hit the post and, you know... The good thing for us is that, you know, had he got it inside the post, it was a goal because Bettinelli wouldn't have got it.
And, right.
But, you know, as I say, Giannis said that, you know, we had the luck on our side. The gods were refunding us for Wednesday night. So, yeah, fantastic. And, you know, after that, I thought, well, you know, what's the ref going to do? Is he going to give them any more penalties? What's going to happen? How are they going to score this now?
No, good point there, David. And it's funny because... up until the very end when Seiko Fofana scores, Fulham were under some serious pressure. And Giannis, I'm going to go to you. Leading up to this and afterwards, like I just mentioned, they were creating, we're talking about Huddersfield Town, several opportunities. But in the 84th minute, their best one was actually a shot by Jacob Butterfield, who had several opportunities late in this match. But this one was tipped. It was tipped onto the post by Marcus Bettinelli. Talk about this, because, again, another pivotal moment by our young goalkeeper stepping up.
I tweeted it as soon as the game was ended, MB Colossus. And you know what? They're just about to, he's been our best player this year. And for someone so young, he's made some crucial saves at crucial times. And, yeah, he's made some howlers, but you expect that young goalkeeper. I mean, it's often said it takes you to get into your 30s, to sort of really hit your peak. It was a brilliant save, and it saved our bacon. And, you know, I was thinking last night, for all the, most of us have been overtly critical of Felix. One thing that he did do was he put Bettinelli in, and it has paid dividends. That's one decision that he made that I can more than agree with. It just looked at, you know, and it's so Fulhamish, isn't it? You know, you have all this luck, and I kept thinking, I'm sure they're going to get an equaliser. Something's going to happen. Something's going to go wrong. It's bound to go wrong. And the enormous relief to get the 3 points. And I'm looking at the table now. I mean, really, Wigan are 8 points behind now. It's basically three games, and we still have to play them. But as you know, here in North America, Russ, when you look at whether it's baseball or basketball, and you look at three games deficit with seven to go, it's not good.
No.
And we're going to be in real trouble. Rotherham had a chance to knock over Sheffield Wednesday yesterday, and Sheffield Wednesday got two very late goals to win it.
Yeah, and we talked about that.
Yeah, that compounded everything as well. They're in real trouble, and we still have to play them at home as well. But
right.
It was a brilliant save. Marcus has been absolutely fantastic. He really has, and he's often had a bunch of penguins playing in front of him. And he's as I said, he saved our bacon, and he certainly did yesterday.
He totally did. He totally did. That's why I'm glad that we could really talk about Marcus Bettinelli, because the one player that really shined, I thought, you know, again, we usually talk about man of the match. There's no question that it's Marcus Bettinelli, because Marcus Bettinelli, everything that I watched the entire replay just a little while ago, and Marcus Bettinelli was just massive in this match. There's no question about that, Giannis. All right, David, I'm going to go to you. Let's go to the very end of this match. Like I mentioned, in between that opportunity by Butterfield, he actually had, I want to say, maybe one or two more, and some other players had some opportunities. They really were putting the pressure on. 6 minutes of stoppage time, and in the sixth minute, in the very last minute, we have a goal by Seiko Fofana. He goes down the length of the pitch. He hits the post, and then on the rebound, scores the goal. And yes, David, I predicted Seiko Fofana would score. You're probably thinking, Russ, please don't mention that you predicted it, but I did. So talk about this goal by Fofana, his first with Fulham.
You've got to be right occasionally, Russ, you know. But I think the credit on this also, and I hope I get the right one, is also to Corley, because I think it was Corley who did a brilliant kind of chested layoff into his path. The ball was played out of defence. We were all behind the ball, literally. I think it's Corley chested it sideways into the path of Fofana, and he's just run clear, basically. And it's a shame, I suppose, it didn't go in first time, but it actually was quite a good finish, the rebound. He took it nicely there.
And, he did.
I listened to the excitement when he was going through on the radio, and then he's missed it, and I thought, oh, damn, and then straight away it's in the back of the net, and you can hear the cheer. And, you know, and Gentleman Jim was, you know, he loves to embellish it anyway, and it's literally the whole of the team are down the other end of the pitch, Bettinelli as well. You know, what a fantastic thing, and obviously that's, you know, at that stage of the game, there's no coming back for Huddersfield. We knew that the points were in the bag, so fantastic, you know, fantastic for Fofana to score in that way, you know. He could have scored a goal at any time as part of a win at home, anywhere, but he scored a goal that has absolutely sealed the game for us. And, you know, you could see the delight as well on the VT when he's in with the crowd there and everything, and, you know, what it meant to him. And, you know, I think he's been a bit unlucky lately, because he's had a few cameo roles of late and looked quite useful when he's come on because he offers something different to the others.
Yeah.
And
no, listen, I
still stand by the fact that I think I said on the preview I would have liked to have seen him start, really.
Okay.
And obviously Kit went for something a little bit more conservative, perhaps. But, you know, great for Seiko Fofana, brilliant for him, obviously, and brilliant for everyone.
Absolutely, David. And listen, I mentioned at the beginning, when I watched back the replay, Seiko Fofana stood out at the very end. Again, he was only on for a short period of time, but his energy and just his overall play made a little bit of a difference near the end of that match. So I want to give the kid some credit. I know he's not our player. You know, he's a Manchester City player. But he really gave out a great effort. And then, you know, again, to see the way that he expressed that with the Fulham supporters afterwards was nice to see. Giannis, I want to get your thoughts about Fofana because it's funny. I got a message on the Clash Talk Facebook page and someone wanted me to ask you about Fofana since we're talking about him right now. I'm going to ask you because earlier in the season you said, you know what, you wanted Fulham to possibly purchase Seiko Fofana, but I believe you changed your mind on it, and I just wanted me to ask you why.
I don't think he has the sort of experience right now that we're going to need to get out of the division. He's a young player. Being a central midfielder is the to me the most important position on the park. And I think that his form has been inconsistent. And I got a little bit of a bee in my bonnet about, you know, loanees coming in and playing. And the more I saw him, I wasn't sure what he was really offering to the teams per se. What we sort of need really is someone like a Boateng, you know, who's someone who, you know, in his 30, 31, who has been, you know, he's played Champions League, he's played at, you know, top of his game, who's going to be able to calm the defenders behind him and the midfielders in front. Fofana is going to be a good player, but in this rough and tumble division that's a Championship, which I think I'll be the first to admit I've underestimated from day one, he's not the right fit for us. I think there are probably better players out there. I'll eat my words on this one, but I think it comes from the fact that we need, you know, I was disappointed we didn't re-sign Boateng. I really was. I thought he might have been
good
the
point.
Idea. Yeah, to I don't know why we didn't re-sign him, but putting a 20, 21-year-old amongst, you know, 28, 30-year-old, you know, big donkeys on heavy pitches, and it's a very physical division. At times he's been out-muscled off the ball. It was a good goal. I'll give him credit, and I love the way he celebrated.
Okay, not a problem there, Giannis. And again, I want to thank Ben Reed for messaging me. He wanted me to ask you because he remembered that you were in favor of him earlier in the season but changed your mind. And you, listen, I'll say this, and I've said this before. Bill Parcells said it best, Giannis. I reserve the right to change your mind. You have the right to change your mind. So there's no problem with that.
That's a good question. Very good question.
Okay. All right. Let's move on. Let's now get into the stats. And the stats are kind of ugly, but the most important stat is 2-0. But we're going to go through the stats. We're going to read them to you guys and see what you get out of it. Let's start with possession. This one's a great one. Possession. Huddersfield Town, 68% to 32% for Fulham. Total shots. Remember how many shots we had against Leeds United? Well, Huddersfield Town had 31. Fulham had 10. On target, Huddersfield Town had 13. Fulham had 3. Their shooting accuracy, Huddersfield Town was at 42%. Fulham were at 30%. Shots blocked, they had 7 shots that were blocked by Fulham players. Fulham had 2 that were blocked by Huddersfield Town players. Passing accuracy, Huddersfield Town were at 73%. Fulham were only at 54%, which is not good. Key passes, Huddersfield Town had 22. Fulham only had 7. Fouls, Huddersfield Town had 10. Fulham had 16. Corners, this one's a great one. Huddersfield Town had 10. Fulham had 1. And then finally, crosses. Huddersfield Town had 51 crosses. Fulham had 10. David, what jumps out to you from those stats in what I call stat attack?
Well, they sound like the game I was listening to, but once again, it just proves the fact that possession counts for absolutely nothing sometimes, and you can have as much possession or as little possession, but at the end of the day, it's how many times the ball ends up in the back of the net is the only stat that really counts.
Very, very well said there, David. Giannis, over to you.
Yeah, I've got to agree. I mean, it's unless we're Barcelona, where most games are going to have 70-80% possession, and they do convert it into goals, it really was a, you know, really was a vice versa from what happened on Wednesday night. And I've got to give Huddersfield credit, because they did play well yesterday. They did have enough chances to bury us. And Kit is going to get a lot of the credit, but my submission is that Kit dodged an enormous bullet yesterday. Because had we lost, which we should have done, I think he would have been done. So if he's got a Bible nearby, he better start consulting it. Because everything that could have gone right, possibly, in a game of that magnitude, went right for him. I mean, if somebody had told him, you know, one red card, two penalties conceded, 32% possession, three shots on target, and you win 2-0, he'd think you're smoking something strong. So he dodged the bullet. He dodged the bullet, but it may all come crashing down next Friday when we play Brentford. I hope not, but I don't want him to think that he's, it's all over yet. We've still got points to get, and it's just as easy that Brentford could knock us by 5 next Friday, like Bournemouth and Watford and Derby County and teams like that have already done this season.
Well, let's hope not, there, Giannis. But it's funny because it always seems to go back to Kit, but he is the manager. I want to ask you guys both this. I was thinking about this today before we go and talk about the players themselves. Giannis, because again, I grew up here, a huge Boston Red Sox fan. My father never liked any Red Sox manager, not one. Always complained about every single one of them. And I get it, because that's what we do. You know, again, we complain, you know, and I've complained about every Red Sox manager known to mankind. But I want to ask you about the Fulham managers. Has there been a Fulham manager, and you've been watching for a long time, then I'll ask David the same question, because again, I understand this with Kit, but has there been a full manager that you haven't complained about? I'm curious. Has there been one that said, you know what, I have nothing bad to say, I never wanted him sacked? Or has there always been a time where you've wanted the manager sacked? It's just an interesting thought that came in my mind. What are your thoughts on that? Was there a full manager that said, you know what, I never want him sacked, I wanted him to be a full manager as long as he could?
Yeah, I've got two that actually spring to mind.
Okay, good.
The first one is Malcolm McDonald. Because in the early 80s, I thought he did an absolutely fantastic job for the club. I mean, those fans that remember, you know, the Houghtons, the Lewingtons, the Gordon Davis. And then it went south for him, allegedly because of an affair he had with a secretary, and he was pushed out of the club. And I thought that was a huge loss. The other one was Roy Hodgson. Because Hodgson had them playing the same style. It was similar. Got us results. The players were happy. The fans were happy. Look at the results he got us. I mean, a major European final. You always want to give managers the benefit of the doubt. But those are the two that spring to mind. Usually what happens is that every manager has a sell-by date.
Right. And that was my point of bringing this up, Giannis.
Yeah, but I mean, if you look at, you know, I mean, you support the New England Patriots, but the thing that keeps Bill Belichick in his job and has done for so many years is he does whatever all the fans want him to do, win, and he finds ways of winning, and he's a winner. So I mean, he's got a great quarterback, but the fact is, you know, 4 Super Bowls tells the story, and at the end of the day, all the fans want their team to win, and but back to the original premise. Those are the two, Malcolm McDonald and Roy Hodgson are the two. I didn't want to go.
Okay, fantastic, because I knew that there would be at least one or two. That's why I wanted to talk about this, because I just remember, you know, again, I was thinking about this. It's like, man, has there been not a time where a Fulham supporter said, you know what, this is the man I want as long as he can be Fulham manager? And the one that stood out to me, Giannis, that's why I wanted to bring this up, was Roy Hodgson, but I figured that there would be others. David, what are your thoughts about that?
Well, you said was a manager you've never moaned about, so no, we've moaned about all of them for one reason or another. But you know, I mean, even Roy, remember?
I'm sorry,
remember
just
Roy
to clarify, a manager at some point that you never wanted to get sacked.
No, Roy Hodgson most certainly, you know, he went before his time. He only did good things for us, and, you know, maybe a time would have come when we, you know, didn't want him anymore, but that day had certainly not come. Yeah, we did moan sometimes about his tactics away from home. We were set up for the 0-0 draw quite a lot, and there wasn't always a plan B as well, and sometimes his substitutes weren't right. But overall, when you look at the whole thing, you know, he made us very strong at home. He made us a force in Europe, and we were comfortable under him, if not more than comfortable. So, you know, he certainly went before his time. Yeah, McDonald, it's an interesting one. I agree with Yanis. I don't think there was any reason for him to leave in footballing terms. I think the thing also, though, with him was he had a great coach in Ray Harford, who was probably very underestimated. He was an unsung hero, and he did a lot of good work for us there. But, yeah, he went for other reasons, I think, so you're right there. I was also going to say Tigana as well. I don't think anyone ever wanted Tigana out, although the last little bit of his tenure was maybe a bit soured by the Steve Marley. Steve Marley was Tigana's Brian Ruiz for Martin Yole, really, I think. He was the player that courted the controversy, the big money signing that never really came good. And it seemed that, you know, Tigana would always play Marley regardless of you know, whether he was justifiable of a place, a bit like it was levelled at Yole and Ruiz. And in the end, ended up in court that I think Mohamed Al-Fayed actually sued Tigana for signing Marley, saying we were robbed, basically, that, you know, we paid over the odds for him. So that was the only blot on his character, because otherwise Tigana did such a fantastic job and brought such a fantastic style of football and everything, a fresh air to us, that, you know, we'd have kept him forever otherwise, I think, if he'd have carried on like that.
Okay, no, good stuff, you know, because, again, I was just thinking about this, you know, before the show, because, again, I understand why everyone's complaining about Kidd. I'm complaining about Kidd, but I wanted Kidd to succeed, so I'm a little bit disappointed, and I've been frustrated by him. But then it got me to think about the big picture, and the only name, again, in my time being a Fulham supporter, that I never, you know, at some point said, you know what, he should go, was Roy Hodgson. But then I was thinking, you guys probably have other managers as well. That's why I wanted to ask you both this question. I thought it would be an interesting topic, because at some point, the majority of them have a sell date, just like Giannis mentioned. You know, usually the majority of them usually go at some point, and you usually want them to go at some point, but others don't. Others, you know, you want them to stay as long as you can, and Hodgson's the one for me. So that's why I wanted to bring that up. All right, Giannis, so let's go on and let's rate the players. And David actually just saw the highlights. So what he's going to do, he actually is going to read ratings from Robert Wilson. Robert Wilson was at the match, so he sent them to David. So he's going to share his ratings, and you're going to share yours. Sound good?
Okay. Yeah, sounds great.
Okay. Let's start with Marcus Bettinelli. I'll start with you.
10. I mean, 10. I mean, you save a penalty, you make critical saves, he bails out the back four, he took a yellow card, but who cares? I mean, he's kept us in the game. He's helped us get the 3 points. Huge 3 points. I can't give him any less than that. 10.
Okay, fantastic. David, over to you. What did Robert Wilson have to say about Marcus Bettinelli?
Well, I was trying to see if Mike had them as well, so we could do a double bubble, but I didn't get any from Mike. But Robert Wilson said Marcus Bettinelli, 9 out of 10.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's great. And in case anyone's wondering, you know, I did mention before that David won't be sharing his thoughts because he just saw the highlights, and it's going to share them by former Fulham player Robert Wilson, who was at the match. Also former Huddersfield Town player. So thank you, Robert, again for sharing these. So it'll be Giannis and Robert Wilson, so it should be interesting. All right, Giannis, let's now talk about, I'm curious, your thoughts about Jack Grimmer and Ashley Richards.
Grim, I'm going to give a 6. Richards, I'm going to give a 4. It's about time Grimmer got some playing time, but I've bitched about enough about that one. I really think he's going to be a fine player, but you can't you know, you can replicate all the game conditions you want on the training field, but the best way to really learn on the job is to do it on the field. Richards gave away the penalty. I think he tripped Scannell in the box for out of position, doesn't offer anything going forward. I have absolutely no idea why we've signed him as a loanee. And I'm going to say, I've said it before and I'll say it again, I resent the fact that, you know, players like him have been coming into the lineup when we've got, you know, perfectly competent players who could be filling the spots. And by the way, I thank you to Robert Wilson for offering his ratings. I'll tell you what, there weren't many better in terms of blue-collar players in the 80s than Robert Wilson. He gave it 110% every single game.
And we could use him right now.
Yeah,
we could use him.
He was a fine player. You know what? He was a fine player. And one of those, when you look back at the annals of history, an underrated Fulham player, but one I certainly appreciate for his work effort and his endeavor. Good player.
Well, that's great. All right, David, back to you. What did Robert have to say about Ashley Richards and Jack Rimmer? What ratings did he give them?
Well, he's probably saying you're mad at the moment. What do you mean, use me? He said, I'm over 50 now. Are you having a laugh? But he gave Grimmer 6 out of 10, and he gave Richards 5 out of 10. So far, you have to say he's more or less in line with what Yanis has given.
Well, two great minds think alike, I guess. All right. I'm going to go right back to you, David. What did Robert Wilson have to say about the centre-back tandem of Turner and Hutchinson? I'm curious.
It could all change now, I think. He's given Sean Hutchinson 6 out of 10. And he's given Turner 7 out of 10.
Interesting. Yanis, to you.
I'm going to give Hutchinson 7. I'm sorry, Turner 7, Hutchinson 4. I mean, Hutchinson, you know, Hutchinson got sent off. You know, whether rightly or wrongly, he's off the field and they're down to 10 men. Turner, 7, because, as I said to you before, I was really pleased when we signed him. And I hope that a few of the brain cells that surround the powers that be at FFC at the end of the season give a call to Carroll Road and see if he's available.
Yeah.
Because he's the sort of experienced centre-back we desperately need. And I think he's slotted in nicely since coming in. And you know what? He'd be someone that I would sign if we could possibly get him. I would get him in a heartbeat because he'll be good for players like Hutchinson and Byrne, lest we forget that Byrne has been left on the back burner, no pun intended. but I've liked his inclusion. And Hutchinson, well, you know, he's been in and out a little bit. I thought he at times looked out of position. Huddersfield strikers, especially Miller, gave him a couple of runarounds. But overall, I'd give 4 to Hutchinson and 7 to Turner.
Okay, fantastic. All right, David, back to Robert Wilson's ratings of Ryan Tunnicliffe and Tim Hoogland. I'm curious his thoughts on those two players.
I see. Here's a good one. Here's Wilson of the Week, actually, I think, or Goldman of the Week. I just realised we don't have a rating for Ryan Tunnicliffe. I was just reading the text message. I'll have to text
okay.
him back. But Hoogland gets 6 out of 10.
Okay. Wow, a Goldman for Robert Wilson. That's pretty good. Okay. Yanis, over to you. Ryan Tunnicliffe and Tim Hoogland.
Tunnicliffe for me gets a 7 and Hoogland gets a 6. Hoogland is still not 100%. But of course we all have a good laugh because he got his customary yellow card. He's quickly becoming the Francis Benali of Fulham. Any Southampton fans out there will remember him. Tunnicliffe 7 because he covered every blade of grass. He's done very well considering, you know, no LVC, no Parker, and he's a player who next year I think can really take off, and I thought he worked, you know, from beginning to end at a really solid game. So 7 for him and 6 for Tim.
Okay, very good. All right, David, right back to you. Does he have ratings for Kaká and Sean Kavanagh?
Yes, we do on that one, yeah.
Okay.
We have Kavanagh gets a 6 and Kaká also gets a 6.
Interesting. Okay. Over to you, Yanis.
For me, Kavanagh gets a 6 and Kaká gets a 7. I'll go back to Kaká again, getting his way back to fitness. And that was one decision that Kit did make a good call on bringing Bodrov on the hour, though it got me a little bit nervous. Kaká a 7, he's someone we've not really talked about a lot and maybe should talk about more, because really, moving forward next season, he has to be a player that you really have to consider has to be in the starting 11. I was delighted he got that goal early. It was a little bit of comedy of errors, but it was the perfect start for us, really. If we score early, we've always got a really good chance of going on and winning a game, and it gave us a lot of confidence. So it was a good corner. It was an in-swinger. The two defenders at the near post couldn't handle it. I might, funnily enough, not have brought Fofana on when I did. I might have waited a bit. But he's done it. But Kaká, I think, has played well, and I don't think there's any reason why he shouldn't start on Friday against the Brent fodder. So, Kavanagh 6 and Kaká 7.
Okay, very good there. All right, Yanis, right back to you. Let's talk about Matt Smith. David and I were talking about Matt Smith because his impact wasn't offensively, but I definitely noticed him more defensively. So I'm curious your rating for Matt Smith and also on Collie Woodrow.
For me, Smith gets a 6 and Woodrow gets a 7. Smith, okay. I thought, led the line pretty well. I mean, remember, you didn't have McCormack there. He's very, very good in the air, and he's defensively as well. I'm not going to say he's our Fellaini by any means, but you know what? The one thing that I've noticed since him coming back from Bristol City, I mean, he's lost some weight. He looks fitter, and he certainly looks leaner, and he looks more mobile as well. He did look heavy when he first came from Leeds United. And I think it's good to see. I always tell strikers, your job isn't just to stick the ball in the back of the net. You've got to drop and help out the midfield so you can defend in numbers. But he did a good job yesterday. Woodrow is 7. Woodrow is one of the players I think has been so unlucky this year in terms of playing time. And I'm looking forward to next season. He really should be one of the first players in the starting 11. Never stopped running. I think the decision to bring Roddy Yeager on for him was probably a little bit of, you know, slowing down time, wasting tactics. But again, if Kit said that there's a possibility that McCormack will be fit next Friday, I would be inclined to play Woodrow. Give him some more time. We're as good as safe now. Let's see what's going to happen at the tail end of the season. Let's give these kids some playing time, because you've got the close season, because you want to be able to evaluate what you've got, and on the basis of that, evaluate what you need to purchase. And I thought Woodrow had a good game yesterday. So, for me, Smith 6 and Corley gets 7.
Okay, fantastic. David, over to you with Robert Wilson's ratings for Matt Smith and Collie Woodrow.
Well, I text Robert, and he's come straight back to me with Tunnicliffe now. He said he worked hard for 7 out of 10 for Tunnicliffe from Robert. As for the front two, he's given Corley just a 6 and Matt Smith a 5.
Interesting.
He did say that. He said that he thought Matt Smith looked a bit tired, perhaps. He said that apparently there was a 20-mile charity walk that the Huddersfield did before the match. So he wondered if Matt Smith had been on that one as well, because he looked a bit tired. But that's it from Robert anyway.
Okay. No, good stuff. Good stuff. All right. Very good. Mm-hmm. All right. So he didn't share any thoughts on the substitutes, right?
No, he didn't, no. I didn't ask.
Okay.
I can text him back if you want.
That's okay. No. But listen, again, major thank you to former Fulham player Robert Wilson for helping us with our ratings today. Robert, thank you. Really, seriously, that was good stuff. Yanis, I do want to get your thoughts, because I was talking to David before on one particular substitute. You know, again, we could talk about Bodarov if you want, but I want to get your thoughts on Fofana in this match. Do you want to rate Fofana?
Yeah, I'm going to. I'm going to give him a 6.5.
Okay.
I'm going to give him some credit for the goal. I wasn't so sure as to why Kit made that substitution. I was questioning that one. But then again, it's not the first time I've had to question some of his substitutions. And looking at the bench, really, who was there who could cover in the centre midfield? Well, you're not going to put pyjamas there, obviously. So we were sort of limited. But I thought the timing, I might have waited a few minutes. Because at that particular time, Huddersfield were trying to throw the kitchen sink, but they were beginning to open up at the back. So I wasn't sure that if we suddenly got a break, we were going to be able to exploit it, irony of irony, as he did late on. But
okay.
I think that was a substitution more of luck than anything else. I think
okay.
it was a case of Kit/Felix Bingo there. But it came off. I mean, to be fair, it did. And I'm sure he had an extra cup of tea last night and celebrated. So good for him.
Boy, do I love doing this show with you. You make me laugh every single show. I love doing this show with you, my friend. I just want to say
that. Thank you, Ross. It must be my guest.
Okay. I do want to ask you, you know, again, I'm curious your thoughts about the substitution of Bodaroff. He came on in the 61st minute after that whole situation. So what did you think about the substitution of Bodaroff? And if you want, you can rate him as well.
Well, I'm going to give him a 6, but I thought, you know what? Why not bring Dan Byrne on? I don't know whose cornflakes Byrne has pissed in. I'd like to know. Because, he's gone. He had two incredible loan spells at Birmingham City and Yeovil. And then last year, we had that ridiculous notion where I think he was played at right back. And his confidence was shot to hell. And then he was okay at the start of the season. And he's been sent out to Vladivostok to pasture. And, he is a good defender. But the thing about young players, especially defenders, is they thrive on confidence. You've got to give him a chance to play. And he's not played. And it's not like Hutchinson has been any better necessarily. I'm not sure he has. Now, the good news, and it is good news, is that I'm hoping Byrne is in against Brentford, but I think we'll probably put Bodaroff in again. I'd like to see Byrne get a chance. I mean, what the hell? Let's see what he can do. I mean, he must be frustrated. It's not just him as well, Russ. Players like Patrick Roberts must be wondering, what the hell do I have to do to get some playing time?
That's a good point.
Really? I mean, it's a little bit, it's really baffling that for a kid that we all so highly rate, we rate him so highly, and yet we won't play him. So I hope Byrne starts. I was hoping Byrne would come on for Kavanagh yesterday, but Kit and I have different ways of thinking. But I'm hoping he gets a start next Friday. It'd be good for his confidence and see what he can do out there.
You know, it's so funny you mentioned Byrne, because he really has fallen off the face of the earth, Giannis. And good point also about Patrick Roberts. You know, there have been a couple situations where I thought, why hasn't he played Patrick Roberts? And you mentioned a very good point. If we rate him so highly, why isn't he playing? David, I want to get your thoughts about those two players. You know, why do you think they're not featuring at all?
Well, Giannis, I have good news and bad news for you, Giannis.
Okay.
The good news is we're not going to get beaten by Brentford on Friday, and the bad news is we're not going to beat Brentford on Friday because, of course, we've got another week to wait because it's international week. So
That's right. Yep.
We've got a bit of time at least to get any injuries out of the way at least, but obviously the guys who are suspended will be suspended back then. But, you know, Dan Byrne, I think it's pretty obvious. You know, as we said the other week, and I remember at the time you were a bit shocked, but both myself and Mike thought that Kit was quite cutting, really, about Dan Byrne when he talked about the qualities that you need in the Championship. When Sarah sort of said to him, well, we've got a tall player on the bench, you know, and he basically said that he wasn't good enough on the ground. And, you know, the signing of Michael Turner was proof to me that Kit doesn't really rate Byrne to do a job at the moment for us. And, of course, we have Amo Bieta as well back. And I think with Michael Turner's been playing that kind of left central back role, the obvious choice against Brentford and obviously the following game against Charlton, if this, assuming, of course, Hutchison ban isn't rescinded for the two-game ban he'll be getting for this one, I would imagine it'll be Bodaroff that we'll see coming back in as he's got the most recent experience with Turner staying in that left central back role. So... And I think Bodaroff's been a bit unlucky because, you know, the defence has been a bit of a mess, hasn't it, really, overall all season that we've been conceding goals. And whoever we've played at centre-back, we've still been letting goals in on and off. And Hutchison, to his credit, has done really well after his bad start, getting back in and establishing himself in the team. But Bodaroff as well, you know, he's been a bit of a rock and, you know, he's been solid. You know, and I don't think he's done that much wrong more than anyone else. And he's been, unfortunately, been the scapegoat at the moment. So I would have thought it would be him to come back for these two games, as I say, assuming they don't get the ban overturned.
Okay, good stuff there, David. Very good. Very good by both of you. I know we're going off on some tangents in different directions, but you know, it's sometimes good to change things up. All right, let's talk about Kit. David, are you good to talk about Kit, even though you just watched the highlights, because you've listened to it, and there are decisions that were made that don't involve you even watching. Do you feel comfortable rating Kit?
You know, I'm happy to give an opinion on it, yeah.
Fantastic. I'm going to start with you. Rate the manager.
Well, I think, you know, on here, you've really got to look at the team more than the manager. And sure, he's, you know, he's had an involvement in the team that he's picked, but I wasn't sure I was entirely happy with the starting lineup or the formation. You play two big men up front, and yet you play with no wide players. So that's kind of a bit of a minus mark in my view. You know, especially when you've got Kaká, who's probably best to play in that wide position, although, you know, he scored a goal and everything. But no, you have a team with three right backs, and you don't even play one of them right midfield, which would have been the kind of an obvious thing. So I wasn't sure about the lineup. There's obviously this underlying question about the team discipline. Lots of yellow cards, red cards, dissent, things like that. We've seen it, you know. I don't know what's happened regarding the Leeds match, but there was the potential of a FA charge for the way that we harangued the referee there. So, you know, some of these things don't come back very well on Kit. The fact that, you know, we're second best the whole match doesn't really come back on Kit either very well, if you look at it. But then, you know, what can you say? We've won the game. He's picked a strange starting lineup or a strange formation. It hasn't really worked. We've been second best and we've won the game. So, you know, how do you rate someone on that basis? How do you rate someone? It's just complete madness, isn't it? So, I mean, I'm gonna go down the middle and give him a 6 out of 10.
Okay, fair enough, there, David. You made very good arguments. You know why you were kind of going down the middle on that. Very good, Giannis.
Oh, this is a tough one for me. I'm going to give him a 5, and I know I'm going to get shot on this one. I just think that, you could say Kit was unlucky on Wednesday night with the amount of possession we had. And although the goals, you know, I'd be critical to say Kit was a defender and defensively, I mean, especially that first goal at the Cottage on Wednesday was a bit laughable. But yesterday, let's be honest, we got shellacked. We got shellacked. We got dominated by Huddersfield team that should have won, and they didn't. And they're probably, you know, Chris Powell's probably scratching his head, going, "How the hell did that happen?" We've taken yet again more yellow. 5 yellow cards is unacceptable. You know, I'm sorry, a red card, yeah, fair enough, but we're indisciplined, and we've self-destructed on many occasions. We got lucky yesterday. It's a super win. I won't take anything away from the lads. They kept going. But for Marcus, Lord knows what would have happened. But we have to look at the way it is, and we were fortunate to get something out of the game. It was the game that saved Kit's job for the rest of the season. And I mean, you know what? As I said after Derby, I thought it might have been a fluke. Let's see what happens against Brentford. They got 13 days to get ready, but I think he got lucky yesterday, and he knows it. So, and I wasn't really impressed with the subs either. So,
okay.
I'm going to give it a 5. It's funny, you know, I was just the Robert Wilson ratings. I was just thinking, doing some research here, looking back at some of the players we had back then. And oh my God, could we do with players Tony Gale and Roger Brown, obviously Robert, Ivor the Engine, Gordon Davis, and Dean Coney, Sean O'Driscoll, Jerry Payton in net. My good God, these were blue-collar players that gave it absolutely everything they had. And, you know, there are times this season and even last season where we could have done with that some guile and guts that these players certainly provided to the lineup when they played. And one thing about that Fulham team is it was very, very disciplined. It was tough, but it was disciplined. And this year, I think a really disappointing aspect for me has been the acute lack of discipline in this team. It's probably the worst year I can remember as a fan in terms of yellow and red cards. We'd have to go back many, many years to see anything close to this. And that is something that has to be addressed, I think, in the close season.
Okay, good stuff there, Giannis. And you shared a good amount of information there. I appreciate that. You just bring up a very good point. The minute you said it, I was thinking, you're 100% right. I think this victory, I didn't think Kit was going to get sacked if he lost his match, but I think at this point, Giannis, I don't think he's going to get sacked. I think he's going to be there to the summer, and that match, I think, kind of solidifies any feeling one way or another. I can't imagine he would get sacked now, Giannis.
Interesting piece of news, Ross, though, this morning on the wire.
I was going to share this with you. Wait a minute. Yeah. Let me set this up because I thought of you right away. This was sent to me also by Ben Reed. He wanted to get your thoughts, and I'll get David's thoughts on the speculation in the Sun about Mick McCarthy and Fulham. Is that what you were about to share?
That's right. I'm Mick McCarthy, and I got a call this morning. It's bloody right and all. I think I'll take the job. I'd be very pleased. He's done a very good job at Ipswich, and I look back, not so much that I thought he did a good job with the Republic of Ireland, let's forget Roy Keane, but let's look back to what happened when he was with Wolves in the Premier League, and the Moxley thought he'd fire him and put Connor in for manager, and what happened, they got consecutive relegations. He's a good manager, and I wouldn't mind if Kerbs takes over, but if Mick McCarthy is a target, I certainly don't have a problem with that. He's a coach who's shown that as he's matured in the game as a gaffer, he's willing to change his tactics and his views. Ipswich are one of the best football-playing sides in the division. Nice short passes, good width. They're very well organized. They're very difficult to break down. And they don't take many yellow or red cards. So I think that's testament to the job that Mick's done down at Portman Road. So if that rumor is true, and I hope it is, then I, for one, would be a very pleased Fulham fan if that were to be the case.
Okay, good stuff. I forgot to mention that. Ben actually messaged me, said, hey, ask the guys about the speculation in the Sun about Mick McCarthy, and I'm like, I have to say it to Giannis just so he could do his impersonation of Mick McCarthy. And I guess, David, that means that you should be able to do your impersonation as well, if you want.
Well, I'm flabbergasted because I thought I was the resident impersonator on the show, impressionist on the show, but Giannis, why are you doing William Hague impression when we're talking about Mick McCarthy?
It's not William. It doesn't sound like William Hague, honestly.
It is.
Really.
I am William Hague. I used to be leader of the Conservative Party. Like that. It's one of those ones, isn't it?
Yeah, but you sound like Cluffy there. So, I mean...
No. We're not allowed to do Clough, Giannis.
No, David, I will allow you to do Clough because Giannis actually did Mick McCarthy. So, if I'm going to let him do Mick McCarthy, you can certainly do Clough.
I'm saving that for another time. I think I'm trying to be behaving myself and not.
No, you have been behaving yourself, David. And to be honest with you, you know, again, you should be able to do it. I'm rescinding that with you and our agreement on Clough. You know, with our bet. You know, don't worry about that. You can do Clough. I'll allow you to do Clough now. Clough is now back on the table.
Nice. Now I'm allowed to do it. You've taken all the fun away from it, Russ, I think. You know,
I can't win with you, David. I can't win.
I'm determined to, although we have a fun time here on Cotty's Talk, we have a laugh and stuff, I'm determined to present a more serious side of myself as well and show that, you know,
okay,
I can occasionally be sensible as well as silly impressions. And
You are. Real quick, because we only have about 5 minutes left on the speculation with Mick
Brian
McCarthy.
Clough,
what are your thoughts about him as a manager?
Well, I will bring Brian Clough back one day if it merits it. But for Mick McCarthy, I don't know. And I'm surprised if they have a low yellow card count, because normally his teams are seen as being quite sort of physical and everything. To be honest with you, I can't see it happening at this stage because of Kerbishley being there waiting in the wings. I would have thought, you know, despite what I've been told, you know, regardless of that he is the heir apparent, should Kit lose his job.
Okay. Okay. All right. Good stuff there, David. All right. Yanis, I'll go to you because, again, David just watched the highlights, so I don't want to make him do this. So share with me your ratings for Huddersfield Town and also the ref.
Russ, before I do, I mean, I hope the most important news of the weekend has been discussed. And that is the fact your daughter got a trophy for a solo performance. Let's not forget this. On Friday night.
Well, thank you, Yanis. It's actually a big deal. Yes, my daughter got a huge trophy for her dance solo. She's on a competitive dance team, and it was kind of a big deal in my family. Thank you very much for mentioning that, Yanis.
You're more than welcome, mate. I'm going to give Huddersfield an 8. I thought they played well. I thought they dominated the game. They got some good players there. Chris Powell is a manager that I happen to very highly rated, and I thought an excellent job. Charlton Athletic.
Okay.
And they just didn't get the rub of the green. It wasn't going to be their day. It was going to be ours for some reason. So I'd give them an 8.
Okay. How about the ref?
I'm going to give them a 4 because I still don't, you know, you heard what happened at West Brom yesterday with McCauley, the McCauley red card nonsense. I find it unfathomable that you can have mistaken identity of a player and send the wrong player off. I find that ridiculous. And he's going to get a lot of stick for that. So I'm going to give him a 4.
Okay. David, did you want to rate the ref?
No, I didn't see the whole performance. So, and I would be giving him, on what I saw, at least as that, because I didn't think they were penalties.
Okay.
That's why I
wanted to ask you, because watching the highlights, and, you know, again, I didn't want to put you in an uncomfortable spot there, my friend. That's why I just thought I would ask.
No, it's okay. I have good and bad news for you, though, Russ.
What's the good news?
Hull are losing.
I know. And David, I have the match on as we're doing the show. I know.
And the bad news is obviously the other team in Fulham are winning.
Yeah. I can't win in this one. But in the corner, yeah. I also see, David, that another team is losing.
I was about to say the other team in Hammersmith and Fulham are losing as well.
Yes. And they can't lose enough for me, to be honest with you. I'm serious. They cannot lose enough. All right, guys. We only have a couple minutes left. Very good show. Yanis, thank you so much for fighting through with your broadband company to finally get in. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, matey. Thank you, David. And, of course, we've got Brent fodder coming up, and hopefully I'll be making an appearance in the near future.
Okay. Okay, very good. And David, did you want to say something as Brian Clough to be even here?
No, I don't. I'm still trying to get over William Hague over there, so
okay.
I'll speak to you again soon.
Okay, great show, guys. You guys really brought it. Listen, this is a fun show to do. I was really looking forward to talking about this victory, and regardless of how they got it, they got all 3 points, and that's the bottom line. I think you both will agree with me on that. And we only have a few matches left, and before you know it, we'll be talking about next season. But we're still not over the line yet. As someone asked me, it's funny, someone asked me, you know, are Fulham safe yet? And I said, no, they're still not safe yet. There is still work to be done. But listen, you guys were great today and I really appreciate you guys doing this show with me. But let's wrap this up. For Yanis and David, I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you again for listening to Cutters Talk Extra Time. Cheers, guys.
Bye. Thanks, Yanis. Thanks for us. See ya.
Take care, Yanis. Take care, dude.
Boys.